This is The Real Deal, providing the best insights on buying and selling small businesses. The Real Deal is presented by the International Business Brokers Association, the world's largest nonprofit organization for those helping others buy and sell businesses. Now, here's your Real Deal host, Chris Diglio.
Welcome to The Real Deal, brought to you by the IBBA, as it has been for the past couple of years. I'm your host, Chris Diglio. And today we're going to talk about a very controversial topic in the world of business brokerage. I've actually seen people almost come to blows over this topic. That's how passionate they are and how controversial this can be. I'm talking about one of the friendliest or the nastiest terms in business brokerage, depending on which side of it that you're on, and that's co-brokering. Now, why would you say this is so controversial? Well, whenever you're talking about confidentiality, trust, control, and yes, money, there are always going to be strong opinions. So on today's show, I'm not going to be sitting here telling you why you should co-broker with other business brokers. In fact, just the opposite. I'm going to talk to someone who very much believes in co-brokering deals. I plan on making him defend his point. We're going to ask him the tough questions that you've had me or asked me to ask him. So we're going to do that. I've talked to brokers around the world on the subject, and I understand why they choose not to co-broker. So let's talk to our guest, and you can decide to co-broker or not to co-broker. My guest today is someone who I have great respect for. Jim Parker is the current state president of the BBF, owner of Boss Group International. He's a CBI and an M&A MI. Jim is an instructor for the BBF and IBBA. He does an excellent presentation on co-brokering to the state associations with the IBBA and around the, and across the country. And he's very passionate and knowledgeable about it. Jim, I'd like to welcome you to The Real Deal today.
Thank you so much, Chris. I am so happy to be here and talking to you today about this.
Well, I hope you're as happy when we're done with the questions as you are right now. You know that you and I both come from, we're very blessed to come from a state that people cooperate in. When I joined business brokerage 20 years ago, there was an organization called the FBBA, and then it formed out to the BBF. And we're very fortunate to have such a strong group. So people sometimes say, well, you're going to talk about it, and of course you believe in it, you're from Florida, but I'm really going to take the point of view with you today from the points of view from people that don't have a state association like we do or don't necessarily believe in co-brokering and why. So if you're ready, I'd love to be able to jump right into it.
Chris, I'm ready. Go ahead.
So I'm going to throw you a softball, and I'm going to give you an easy one to start with. Tell us, why are you so passionate about co-brokering?
Chris, I really think it comes down to the numbers, and I think the numbers show and prove themselves. You know, here in Florida, last year in 2018, we sold almost $500 million of Main Street businesses just here in Florida. We have over 3,000 listings, sometimes upwards of 3,500 listings, and we sell almost 1,500 businesses a year. And I think those numbers themselves prove that co-brokering is successful if it's done right.
And I would agree with you, but we live in Florida and we co-broke and we get along for the most part. But if someone's listening today and they're from a state, let's say Colorado or somewhere in the Carolinas, and they just do not believe in co-broking, or someone's listening today and says, I've been a business broker for 25 years and I don't co-broke and I've made a great living. How do you explain to them that you feel it's in their best interest to co-broke?
First of all, I'd like to say kudos to them. They're doing great. They're doing fantastic. They feel like they're being very successful, and I'm sure that they are. You know, Tom West, one of the founders of the IBBA, he adopted later on in his career co-brokering at his office, and he estimated that his sales increased by 26% when he instituted co-brokering. And on average in Florida, on average, 30% of the businesses sold in Florida are co-broke between two different companies. So, you know, no matter how successful you are in the industry and how much money that you're making, I think everybody would want to make 20 to 30% more.
I'd like to make an extra 20 to 30%. Can we do that even though we still co-broke? If we figure that out, Jim, we'll retire in another year or two. How's that? You know, we talked about co-brokering and we're from a friendly state and we have an organization. But again, I want to really touch on the people that might not have what we have here. And they've reached out to me and shared with me their objections on co-brokering. So I'm going to go down the list of about four or five things that they talked about. First and foremost, you would think it's going to be their commission, and that might be number one on their mind, but that's not what they say first. So the first and foremost, they say confidentiality. People feel that if you co-broke, you increase the risk of breaching confidentiality, and that's not in the best interest of the seller. How would you respond to that, Jim?
I would say that that person is 100% correct. You know, the number one thing that we have to worry about is, as business brokers in this industry, is confidentiality. You know, I sit in front of my sellers and I'm listing a business, or I'm talking to them about selling their business. That's one of the things that I am I'm getting my point across the strongest to them, is that I'm going to keep the sale of their business confidential. And that really means something to me, because I'm promising them that I'm going to do that. And I know that if I don't protect the confidentiality of the sale of their business, it could actually hurt their business. They may not only not sell it, but it could hurt their business. So that confidentiality is a big issue to me. I agree that you know, co-brokering can increase the chances of that confidentiality being broken. But that's if you're co-brokering with the wrong people. And I think that's the biggest thing I want to get across to the audience today, is I'm not saying you should co-broke with everybody out there. You shouldn't co-broke with residential real estate agents in your area that have never sold a business. They don't know the process of selling the business. What I'm saying is co-brokering with other brokers, other professionals like yourself that really know what they're doing. And they understand those confidentiality concerns. And those are the people that you should be co-brokering with.
Jim, let's say I'm a business owner and I'm looking to sell my business, and I find you, I like you. I've looked up Jim Parker. I've looked up Boss Group International. I say, wow, that's a great group. That's a great guy. He's going to do a great job. I trust you, Jim. But how is it that you could assure me that the people that you're co-brokering with, who I don't know whether they have the same level of competence that you do and the same level of trust in them that I have in you, how can you guarantee me that they're, once they know that my business is for sale, that they're not going to leak it to somebody?
Chris, I guess I could not guarantee to a seller that won't happen. But, you know, I've been a business broker for 20 years. And during that 20-year process, I've listed and sold a lot of businesses. And I would say in those 20 years, I've probably had one or two instances where confidentiality was broken. And it's usually not on the other broker's part. It's usually with their buyer. And I've had one or two where I'm working with a buyer and they break the confidentiality. So I don't think it's so much the co-brokering situation that you have to worry about. It's just educating the buyers. And I know the other brokers educating the buyer on because they're a professional broker. They're educating the buyer that they have to keep the business confidential, just like I'm educating my buyers that a business has to be confidential. It's the buyers that we have to be concerned about. But I think any true business broker out there that's a professional, they understand the confidentiality issues, and they know that they need to educate their buyers about those situations. And once in a while, you're going to have a buyer, whether you're co-brokering or whether it's your own buyer, that's going to break that confidentiality.
So it comes down to a risk reward. There is a higher risk in co-brokering that the confidentiality could potentially be leaked. However, there's also a greater chance of selling the business by co-brokering, because one person can't work with every buyer. And there might be someone out there working with a buyer that's perfect for your business. And if you did not co-broke, you would not sell it to them. So the percentages of the businesses sold go up through co-brokering. And again, it becomes a risk reward. Is the risk worth the reward?
Absolutely. Chris, we're talking about an industry that's broken. Seriously, 10 to 20% of businesses for sale are going to sell. That's a nationwide statistic. And, you know, just given the opportunity to co-broker, you're now getting that business in front of so many more brokers that have all, like a seller comes to me, you know, I have about 10,000 buyers in our database here at Boss Group. And, you know, one of the first things we do is we come back to our database and we go through and we try to find a buyer that matches that listing. But when I am able to get that out in front of all those other brokers that are members of our association, they all have their own database of buyers. And so it's greatly increasing the chances that the seller is going to be able to sell their business. And again, you know, I think in 20 years of doing business brokerage, I've had one or two instances where there was a break in confidentiality because of co-brokering. But I've also, me personally, have had one or two buyers in my 20 years. The buyers that I worked with when I was the listing agent and working with the buyer, where there was a break in confidentiality. quality. Again, it's the buyer. You can tell the buyer sometimes this is very confidential. You can't tell anybody the business is for sale, et cetera, et cetera. And no matter how much you tell them or how much you educate them, you just got that one renegade buyer that does that. And again, I don't think that's a reflection on co-brokering. I think that's just we all get those buyers from time to time.
Yeah, the NDA or the confidentiality agreement that they sign is only as good as the individual behind the signature. And sometimes you could say to your blue in the face and that they shouldn't, and they're not allowed, and they're not supposed to talk to anybody about it, and they're just going to go off and do what they're going to do, whether it's your listing or it's not your listing. But I want to touch now on experience. You mentioned a little while ago you want to co-broke with other people that have experience and maybe just not a residential real estate agent who sold someone's house, and now all of a sudden they're looking to buy a business, so they call you and they say, hey, I've got a buyer, and you know they've never sold a business before. Clearly, you might not want to co-broke with them, but there are people out there that say, okay, I'm not in Florida again. I'm in a different state. We don't have an association, and we don't co-broke, or I'm in Canada. I talked to a good friend of mine in Canada, and he said that, you know, there are just not enough good quality brokers out there. So should you just put a blanket statement on there and say, I don't co-broke? Or are there things outside of Florida, if you're in a different state or in a different country, that you can look at to determine if that person is worthy to co-broke with or not?
Well, you know, again, you've said it a few times now, Chris. We're lucky to be in Florida, where we have a co-brokering organization, and every member that comes through our organization has to go through a two-day orientation. They have to abide by the rules and regulations, and we explain those rules and regulations in that orientation. The broker of record or the owner of the brokerage company is responsible for that new agent at the end of the day. So in Florida, we do have that going. I guess if we're talking about, you know, people in other states and the experiences and things that they experience, I think the biggest thing is that they should be looking outside their company and trying to co-broke with other companies and contacting those companies and saying, hey, would you be interested in, you know, co-brokering? You can bring buyers for our listings, and we can bring buyers for your listings. And, you know, I think that people know in their area who the good brokers are and who are not the good brokers. You know, one of the first things that I would do if I was in one of those other states is that I would be saying, who's an IBBA, high BBA member? You know, who's got their CBI? Who's an M&A source member? You know, and I'd be looking at the credentials of those people. And those are the people that I would want to reach out to and try to co-broke. Chris, it's a win-win-win-win situation. You know, if you're increasing the chances of your seller selling their business, or if you're increasing the chances of a buyer that you know is qualified and has the experience and the money and the motivation to buy a business, if you can increase the chances of them getting into the right business, and you yourself can make a good commission and the other agent can make a good commission, it's a win-win-win situation for everybody involved.
Well, you know, the old saying, 50% of something is better than 100% of nothing, right? If you don't sell it because you just won't co-broke, it's fair to say that you've not only didn't you make a commission, you've lost money because you've spent quite a bit of money not just getting the listing, but then marketing the listing only to be unsuccessful.
Chris, I think that's a good point. You know, 50% is better than, you know, 50% of something is better than 0%. However, I don't look at it that way. When I co-broke, whether it's a 50-50 or a 60-40 split, and let's just say it's a 50-50 split, I don't look at it as, I'm getting 50% of the commission and that is it, and I'm giving up the other 50%. You know, the other broker is getting 50% of that commission, but you know what else they get? They're getting 50% of the work that's involved in that transaction. They're taking half the workload off my shoulders, and that allows me to spend that time working on another deal. And I'd rather have many, many deals lined up. I'd rather have 7 or 8 things closing at a time rather than having 1 or 2 or 3 things closing at a time. And it's kind of like not putting all your eggs in the same basket.
No, I agree. It frees up your time. So let's talk about control, because you just mentioned that. It's been said to me that once you turn over a deal or cooperate with another broker, you quickly lose control of the deal, and then only bad things can happen. The argument that this is not in the best interest of someone looking to sell their business. How would you counteract that argument?
And I'm going to again use the BBF, and I keep using the BBF as an example because, you know, in Florida now, between the BBF and the FBBA, we've been successfully co-brokering 35 years. So I'm going to again use the BBF because it's a good example. But, you know, the BBF rules and regulations state that the listing agent is the one that's controlling the transaction. They're the ones that are in charge of, you know, when the buyer-seller meeting is going to take place, when it's going to take place, that type of stuff. They're kind of the driving force in the scenario. But, you know, sometimes, you know, the personalities involved is a big situation as well. I recently closed on a transaction. I was working with the buyer. Another agent was working with the seller. And I got to tell you, my personality was perfect for my buyer. And the listing agent's personality was perfect for the seller. And I really do not believe the other agent would have been able to close that transaction with my buyer just because of the personalities. And I really believe that I would not have done an effective job working with the seller because of the personality differences. So we were able to bridge that gap. I don't look at the other agent as an adversary. I look at that other agent as a partner in a transaction. We're going to work together to get to the same goal for our seller and for our buyer. And, you know, that's a collaborative effort that we're doing, and we're working together and not working against each other.
Well, if you're going
to co-broker, I think that's a very important concept to understand when you're co-brokering, is that you're working together and you're using both your strengths to get to the same goal.
I would agree. If you're going to co-broke, you have to look at that opportunity to work with another broker as a unified effort. You're both working for the same goal, and that's to get to the finish line, if it's possible. Look, there are deals that you get into due diligence and things go bad and things weren't as what you thought they were, and the deal's just not going to close. But the ultimate goal is, when something's under contract, is either to get it to the finish line or put it out to pasture, but get it to the finish line and work together to do that. We not to sit there and pound our chest to say, I'm better than the other person, or to try to prove your worth. It's just to do the job that you're there to do. So control could be an issue, and people sometimes don't want to lose control, but I don't think they should confuse that with letting someone else do their job, letting them work with their client as you work with yours. And if everyone understands their roles and we don't step on everybody's toes, it could be done it could be a very beautiful thing when it goes right.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, to go a little bit beyond that, too, is, you know, if I'm working with a seller and there's another agent involved that's working with the buyer, you know, it makes my seller feel more at ease and more comfortable, because my seller feels like, you know, I'm more on their side. And then the buyer feels more comfortable and they're more at ease because they feel like the other agent's on their side. And you know what? When we're co-brokering, you know, me and the other broker, you know, we might come to head here and there throughout the process. But at the end of the day, we're working towards the same goal, and he's a professional. So he or she knows how the transaction is supposed to happen, and I know how the transaction is supposed to happen. And we know, each of us know, when our own buyer or seller is not right on a situation, and we can correct that.
Now, Jim, let's talk about the dirty word in the room, the thing that they don't want to talk about, but it's the root of all evil. And that's money. It all comes down to money. So commissions. There are some brokers that have flat out said, I'm not going to share my fees with anyone. I don't need help in selling a business. If a business is priced right and marketed properly, you don't need a broker to sell it for you. How do you feel about that?
You know, Chris, I co-broke anywhere from 3 to maybe 8 deals a year. Probably about a third of my deals are co-broked. And, you know, I really think that I make a lot more money because I'm co-brokering. You know, a few months ago, I had a deal where I had a buyer calling me up on one of my listings. It was a $2 million deal, and the deal was already under contract. But talking to this buyer, they were so qualified. They had the experience. They had the money. They were extremely motivated. They were like the perfect buyer. I was just sitting there thinking, dang, you know, they're the perfect buyer. I had no other business in my inventory that matched the criteria that they were looking for. They were looking for a business in either Florida, Texas, or California. And so I get off the phone with the individual, and I started doing a search. And I came across a business in South Florida that was not exactly what they were looking for. It was just kind of a little bit off. And I called up the other broker, learned a little bit more about the business. They sent me over some information. I talked to the buyer about it, and the buyer got excited about it. The buyer would have never approached that other broker about that business because that wasn't exactly what they were looking for. So the seller, the listing agent, was able to sell that business that I don't think they would have been able to sell to this, to at least this buyer. And me personally, I would have had to let that buyer go if we didn't have a co-brokering situation. So it was a win-win, and that was a $3 million deal.
It's a nice payday for everyone. First and foremost, the seller sold his business. Brokers did their job. Buyer got a good business. So yeah, it's a win-win-win all the way around.
And the listing agent was thrilled, Chris. The listing agent was thrilled that we closed on the deal. Then, you know, I ended up picking up half the workload, and it allowed that agent to go out and work other deals.
Yeah, it's a perfect situation. But let's talk about, we've talked about state associations, and obviously the BBF has been recognized as one of the leaders or the leader in state associations when it comes to the sale of businesses. But there are many people that just don't believe in not just co-brokering, but they say, I don't want to join a state association that mandate me to co-broke with people that maybe I don't feel are worthy of co-brokering. One of the issues that's been brought up is confidentiality. I've had brokers say to me, what's to prevent a member of an association from logging in, going behind the scenes where the public can't go, but the brokers can go, seeing the name of the business that's for sale from another business broker, and then telling a relative or friend that's a competitor of that business that's for sale that, hey, did you know such and such is for sale? I mean, their argument is there's no way to police this or to find out who leaked the information. So how is an association, is it possible to guarantee that this won't happen?
All we have to fear is fear itself. Really, that scenario. You know, we've been doing it in Florida for 35 years. We've had very little problems. You know, if that situation, you know, I can't remember ever in the association where we've kicked somebody out because they broke confidentiality, and they went around and was telling people that a certain business was for sale. But they could get kicked out if that happened. If that came to light that somebody was doing that, they would get kicked out of the association. And not only would they get kicked out of the association, Chris, but, you know, the business brokerage community is a very small community, and word would get out very, very quickly among all the members and non-members of the business brokerage industry in Florida that this broker is just somebody that you cannot trust. And I think at the end of the day, one of the reasons why it works so well is that, you know, all of us, we're professionals. We want to look good, not just to our seller and to ourselves, but we want to look good to our peers, and we want to have the professional respect of our peers. And, you know, I think that what comes down to it, too, is that you're always trying to improve yourself as a broker because you're working with other professional brokers on a continuous basis. And I'll tell you, Chris, I really think I'm a better broker because I co-broke. You know, because when I do a deal, I'll say, okay, I really liked how this broker did this, or, you know, I really liked how they did that, or I didn't really like what they did here, or I really don't like what they did there. And you start picking these things up from, you know, 20, 30 brokers a year, and it just improves yourself as a broker. But at the end of the day, I really think people want to do the best that they can, and they want to look good in front of their peers.
I think what you said earlier was even more important than that. I believe in everything you just said, but even more important, if you have a state association where it mandates co-brokering, I think the onus is on the association then to make sure that there are things in place to protect the person that's putting the listings in or the business broker and the seller of the business. And the ways that you talked about earlier that you've done that, you have requirements, not just anyone can join, and you have to go through training, and you have to go through maybe background checks and things of that nature. I think that if you put those things in place, I think that gives someone more of a comfort level to say, okay, they're not just letting anybody see my listing.
Correct.
I think that's important.
Well, then, and the association will take a big stance on that. I mean, that's, you know, confidentiality is such, you know, it's an issue in our industry, and it's one of the biggest things we do as business brokers is protect the confidentiality of a seller. And you know, that's broken. Yeah, they shouldn't be a member of the association.
I mean, unfortunately, it only takes one time for it to happen. Where confidentiality is leaked, and we could make up for it and make sure it doesn't happen again. But now me, the business broker, I've now looked bad to somebody. So yeah, you know, we can only do so much. And at the end of the day, you have to decide, is it worth co-brokering or is it not? But let's get back to money. So I joined
real quick, Chris. I do want to say real quick, because I want the listeners to understand this. We're talking confidentiality. We keep talking about, you know, the fear of confidentiality or seller's name of business getting out that it's being sold. But that happens so rarely. I mean, I can count on one hand in my 20 years where that's happened, whether it was myself working with the buyer and the seller, or it was another broker involved. And again, it wasn't because of me when I had the buyer and the seller. And I really don't think it was the other broker when it happened the one or two times with the other broker. You know, it's just buyers being renegades, and that's going to happen regardless. I don't think that is that big of an issue that the listeners really need to be concerned about.
It's not that big of an issue, and I would agree with you, but it's the biggest issue that someone that doesn't want to co-broke that they make. And I think sometimes they make that statement, I'm not going to say out of ignorance, but just maybe out of fear. Because look, I've been involved in well over 500 transactions in my career, and one time have I had an issue with confidentiality, and it wound up being it was the seller that wound up leaking the information prior to me listing the business, and it wasn't my fault at all. So sometimes it's just going to get out there. So sometimes, again, there's
and
just
Chris,
only so much you can do.
I agree with you when you said that, you know, it's just fear, and that's why I started when we started talking about confidentiality, the first thing I said is all we have to fear is fear itself.
I agree with that statement, but let's talk about a valid point, or what I believe is a valid point. I deal a lot these days in lower middle market transactions that are going to be more than the regular Main Street business brokerage transaction. They may be, you know, 2 to 10 million, 10 to 20 million, and or 20 million and above. And I'm a big believer in co-brokering, and I stand behind it. I'm also a bigger believer in the larger the transaction, the less need to co-broke with others. I know we have people from the M&A source and people in lower middle market companies that are listening to this saying, well, I just never going to co-broke because I just don't see the need to it. Do you buy into that at all, that the larger the transaction, maybe it's not as necessary or as needed to co-broke because there's a different marketing behind the business like that?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think not only is it not needed, but you know, it's totally different animal. I think when you start talking about selling, you know, 10, 20, $30 million businesses, it's completely different than selling a Main Street business. You know, I think that when you're selling a Main Street business, a business that's going to sell for under $1 million, especially businesses are going to sell for $100,000 or $300,000, I think co-brokering is the way to go. Is even going to increase the chances of the business selling, and again, the other broker is going to pick up half the workload. As you get into the bigger businesses, it's just a completely different animal. You know, the way you handle getting it in front of buyers is completely different. And you know, now we're talking about peg groups and strategic buyers and things like that. And you know, I totally agree with you. Here at the BBF, what we do is any business that sells for under 1.5 million, it's a 50-50 co-broke between the members, and 1.5 to 5 million to under 5 million, it's a 60-40 split, 60% corner of the listing agent. Because again, when you get into the little bit bigger businesses, you know, the $1.5 to $5 million price range, the listing agent, if they're doing it right, you know, they might have 100 hours of work into it before they even bring the business to the marketplace. So they should get a little bit more commission. And then anything over $5 million, it's decided between the listing agent and the selling agent, you know, what that commission split should be. And again, you know, you get into 10, 15, $20 million deals, yeah, you probably shouldn't be co-brokering.
And kudos to the BBF, because when I was a member, I fought many years of my belief that that's how it should be. And I'm very happy to hear that on the larger transactions now, that that is the case, because for, even with the 100 hours you put into it, you know, you have the cost of a CBR or a SIM, and you could be talking, you know, $10,000 invested between the putting together the packaging and doing your marketing. There's just a higher expense on the side of the larger transactions than there are if you have a buyer. So I'm very happy to hear, and I hope other states take a look at that, that allow some negotiations to go on between the brokers and say, hey, if you have somebody, you know, I'm willing to pay you. But it, it may only be a referral fee. It may be, you know, 30%, 40%. And if you have a great relationship with someone and you do a lot of deals, you may still decide to co-broke 50-50. But, you know, I do believe that in what you've done, what you guys have, the changes you've made, and I think that's a great change.
Well, thank you. I think it was well needed, and I'm glad we were able to get that passed, and the membership and you know, as a whole seems very happy about that new change.
Jim, we're coming down because we only have typically about 30 minutes or so, but I want to ask you one last thing. We took this from the point of view of the business broker who's out there, why you should co-broke, why you shouldn't co-broke. But again, let's talk to me as I'm a seller of a business, and I'm interviewing two brokers, and broker A tells me, you don't need to co-broke. I don't need to be out there in an association because I can't control it. The fear of confidentiality could be breached. Your employees can find out. Your customers could find out. Doom and gloom and all these bad things can happen. Broker B says, oh, no, you have to co-broke because it opens up all opportunities for buyers. Confidentiality certainly can be protected. And it just gives you a better chance of selling your business, which is the ultimate goal. As a business owner, I know what your position is, but as a business owner, how do you decide to go with someone who's going to co-broke or not co-broke?
Well, you know, what you just mentioned, you know, I don't go up against that very often when I'm talking to a seller. You know, here in Florida, you know, well over 95% of the Main Street business brokers are BBF members. It's actually very hard to practice in Florida not being a BBF member, because the business owners, a lot of the business owners that you talk to, they know about the BBF and they're aware of the BBF. You know, it's a name that they've heard over and over again. And so if you're not a member of the BBF, it's really hard to practice selling Main Street businesses in the state of Florida. Now, if I did come across a seller that's talked to a non-BBF member and they put fear about confidentiality issues in the forefront, you know, that's something that I have to sit down and educate and explain to the seller that that's an unnecessary fear. And I'd have to explain to them that the benefits of co-brokering are huge and the chances of the confidentiality being broken are very, very, very slim. And we could go one step further where, you know, we could have the seller sign a form that allows us to leave the name of the business off the MLS system. And when I say that, the general public can never see the name. It's just members of our association that can see that. So we always have that option as well. But I think at that point, it's the seller not being properly educated on how co-brokering works, because the chances of them selling their business is going to greatly increase by putting it out there for other brokers to be able to co-broke that listing.
And I'd say this.
You want one broker selling your business and trying to get one broker out there trying to bring buyers to you, or would you rather have 1,000 brokers trying to bring buyers?
No, it's certainly a good point of view. Look, I can make the argument to the other side if I wanted to. However, I do believe in co-broking, although I'm not a member of any state association at the current time because some of the things have shifted in my practice as far as what I'm working on, but I still do Main Street transactions. But when I do, I know the guys that are doing the deals and people like yourself and other people that I've been associated throughout the years. And not only will I send an email blast to those and say, hey, I have this new listing if you have a buyer. So I still co-broke with the members and I still share. And so I'm a believer in that. So even if you're not a part of a state association, I still don't think that gives you the reason to not want to co-broke. In my opinion, I still co-broke and I'll reach out to those that I know that are good, that sell businesses, and I'm happy to share in my fees with them. So, you know, either way, again, I know I'm a little biased. I'm the host of the show, and I'm trying to talk from a point of view of, hey, co-broker, not co-broker. I am a little biased when it comes to co-brokering because I've spent my career doing that. But I wanted to make sure that I was bringing the points across because there are some very valid points in people that don't want to co-broke. And I hope on today's show that we've done a good job of bringing those points up because they are valid. Whether I agree with them or not, I don't discredit them because I believe they have valid points, especially where the concern comes from who you're going to co-broker with. Because you said it yourself, Jim, yes, you believe in co-brokering, but you're not going to co-broke with just anybody. So, yeah, it's co-brokering with an asterisk, I call it.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Co-brokering with the right people.
We could talk about this subject probably for hours. If you give me a side to argue, I can argue it, and then tell me to argue the other side, I can argue it. But I think we left it up today to the listeners to decide, you know, to co-broker, not to co-broker. We gave them both sides of the co-broker debate. So if you're a broker, at this point, it's up to you whether you decide if co-brokering is for you or not. If you're selling your business and you're an owner, it's up to you to decide if it's in your best interest to hire a broker who's going to cooperate or co-broker with other brokers or not. But Jim, I want to thank you for sharing your opinions on co-brokering. It's not always a popular point of view, but I certainly appreciate your position on it. Now, there are going to be people out there listening today that want to give you a call. You know, they're going to call you up and want to yell at you about co-broker. No, I'm just kidding. They want to call you up. And if there's someone out there that'd like to learn more about you, your company, or the BBF, how can they get in touch with you, Jim?
Chris, I really encourage anybody that, you know, has any interest, even if it's the smallest little bit of interest in co-brokering, to give me a call. I would love to talk to you one-on-one. You know, I'm very passionate about co-brokering. I'd like to see you increase your practice by 20 to 30%. You know, for you to make 20 to 30% more money, I'd like to talk to you about how you can do it and how you can do it correctly and properly. And if you'd like to give me a call, give me a call at 407-329-3273. Again, it's 407-329-3273. And it's just information that I want to share and talk with you. I don't get anything out of it personally other than, you know, seeing our industry prosper through co-brokering.
I am glad that you came on today and talked to us about this. This is a topic I've wanted to have on since we started the podcast. And I was politely told that maybe this isn't something we should talk about. And I said, look, we could do it in a manner that's respectful to everybody because everyone is entitled to their opinion. And it doesn't make you right and the other person wrong or vice versa. It just means that you have your own philosophy and your opinions. But I'm very big on one thing, as I know you are, Jim, and that's education. So today what we did, we educated people on the pros and cons of co-brokering. You didn't say co-brokering was perfect, but you said it basically was perfect for you and it works for you and why it worked for you and why you feel it works for others. And that's fine.
I think it's great. And, you know, I just want to leave one last thought, Chris, if that's okay. You know, Florida is the only state other than the New England area that has a co-brokering organization. And if you're in a state that does not have a co-brokering organization, it does not mean that you cannot co-broke. You know, again, I said it earlier, you know, go to the people, the companies in your area that you respect and you think they're good brokers. They're IBBA members or they have their CBI or you just know them because you run into them. And you know they're good people and they're good brokers, and try to form a little group, whether it's, you know, four different companies or 10 different companies or 15 different brokerage companies, you know, try to form a little group that you can co-broke between each other, you know, and see what kind of results you get from it.
That's how the FBBA started years ago. That's how the BBF started. It's a group of few that turns into something that can turn into something big. So, Jim Parker, thank you so much. Good guy. I look forward to doing more deals with you in the future and seeing you around the area and then again at the conferences. If you're listening to the podcast today and you're a fan of The Real Deal, please share this on your social media platform. Spread the word. It's a lot of good information for people to hear. The IBBA puts this on, you know, for you, the listener, for the broker, for the business owner. No one's compensated for doing this. It really is a labor of love. We're happy to do it and bring you great guests like Jim Parker. For more information on our show or to listen to more episodes of The Real Deal, visit us at ibba.org/the-real-deal. Or you can just go to ibba.org and there'll be a big icon on how to get more information on the show. Thanks for listening to today's episode on co-brokering. I look forward to talking with you on the next episode of The Real Deal.